Smith leads Sisson shorthanded, picks up the area pass. Sisson shoots and scores! Colton Sisson fires up Tim McGraw for the first time in season 25 with a backhanded goal on a shorthanded breakaway. 1-0 Preds.
That was Colton Sissons for the Predators' home opener of their 25th season last night. Short-handed goal on the penalty kill and an excellent call by our very own Max Herz that was filling in for Pete Weber, who is out sick, unfortunately. Pete, we wish nothing but the best for you. Can't wait till you get back on the call, but Max stepping in and doing a great job. Welcome into Riddle and the Reporter live here from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studio. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook live every single day for all of our day shows. Nick Keyser in the building here with me. The Reporter finally getting to go and report on some things at his first Preds home game as the 102.5 The Game Preds Reporter. Nick, how are you today, and how was the game last night?
I'm good, yeah. It was fun to be at the game last night, the home opener for the Nashville Predators, and a lot to get into there for sure. It was just a matchup that encapsulated what this group is going to be all about this year, I think, and Barry Trotz was very pleased with the performance last night, and none other than David Poile was in attendance last night. I had several people drop me messages of, he's out here. He is in the building. He's taking it all in. And the Preds, they're in a new era, Junie. And for me, at least, that is exciting.
I thought it was ultra exciting. Last season was the first year that I really sat and tried to watch every single Preds game that I could. I was always just a casual viewer. But since joining the station, like, I was like, hey, you know, I need to know what's going on with the Preds.
Of course you do, yeah.
You know, last year watching them, I mean, sometimes it was like watching paint dry to me. I was just like, because, you know, I grew up watching the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yes.
That was the team that I grew up with because they were good with the Steelers being good. And, you know, those were just always my teams.
But you had the whole entire pleasure of watching Evgeny Malkin and Sid the Kid.
And don't forget about my boy Chris Letang.
And Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yes. Great teams. But regardless, you know, when I started watching the Preds, and I did watch them a little bit during their Stanley Cup run, and, you know, that you know, window between 16, 17, 18, when they were really good. But this version of the Preds last season was nothing like that. And so, you know, I was engineering the broadcast from Barrel House last night with Chase McCabe. And, you know, he was kind of taking me around, showing me around what he does. And we sat up in the press box a little bit, watched the game, listened to Max while the game was going on. And I was just blown away with the speed and the puck movement and the shots that were taken. It was like as soon as they entered into the offensive zone, normally when they would just try and set up their offense and kind of move the puck around, typically unsuccessfully last season, they would like enter the offensive zone and immediately just slap shot on goal, bounced off the goalie's pads and immediately try and create something in front of the net. I was like, this is ultra exciting.
Yeah,
it was.
It's
fast pace.
Yeah, and that's what you want. And look, going back to training camp, you know, I was telling you from time to time what it was like to watch them at training camp and what their new system was going to be all about. And last night, like I just said earlier to start our show, this is what they're going to be. This is the fast-paced organization that we've wanted to see. And just in terms of the results from what Barry Trotz's vision was to Brunette's vision, hell, even Dan Hynut's penalty kill, who was superb last night coaching them, because, I mean, we can get into that later specifically, but looking at what they were able to do successfully last night is exciting. Does it guarantee that you're going to win all the other 80 games? No, by no means. But this is exciting because you see a group that's bought in. That's the most exciting part about all of this, Junie, is you see a group of guys that it's a mix of veterans. Everybody has thought, well, this team got younger. No, not really. This is a team that's right in the middle of everything in terms of the average age, the skill level, who's been in the league longer. I mean, last night, Gus Nyquist from the corner, he gets beat up in the corner and pops one off of someone's skate and in. And then you also get a flash of, you know, Yusso Parson and doing his thing, you know, burying the empty netter as well. UC Saros, he picks up his first shutout of the season. Junie, it took UC Saros 30 games to get his first shutout last season, which is baffling to me. And so just watching that group last night, it was good to see. But another thing that I noticed that happened last night as well, they were, you know, changing their personnel just a little bit, nothing too crazy. But yeah, it's high action hockey for sure.
Now, and it's a much better product than we were seeing in the John Hines era. And I think, you know, the way Smashville showed up last night for that home opener, it was really special, not only just for the, you know, 25th anniversary of the team coming here, but how much the team has grown and the fans have grown, and you're starting to see that next generation of Preds fans, you know, guys that were, you know, going to games as teenagers when they first moved in, they're having kids, and now their kids are kind of flowing in and creating that next generation of Predators fans. So it was just a really special night, and to encapsulate all of that, getting a shutout in your home opener. What was it? You brought this up and tweeted it out. It was the first one since 2007 when our, you know, very own Chris Mason was in goal, and that was the only time they've ever had a shutout in the home opener.
Yep, it was the so here was what my tweet said. That was the second shutout in the Predators' home opening game. The first was achieved by Chris Mason on October 4th, 2007 versus Colorado. So it was good to see that last night for sure. And another just notable thing as well, Colton Sisson scored the first goal of the game. That is also the second time in franchise history where the Predators have opened play at home for an entire season with a shorthanded goal. The last was Ryan Suter, the beloved Ryan Suter here in Nashville. He scored the first goal of the season shorthanded in Nashville back on October 13th, 2011 against the then Phoenix Coyotes. So, but I do want to ask our listeners this really quickly, Junie, because I want to see what their answers are all show long. Text 615-737-1025 for the player you're most excited to watch this year, because there were a lot of exciting players to watch last night. And Luke Evangelista is one of them. Tommy Novak is one of them. And there are so many things to be excited about. So please text us your most exciting player moving forward this season at 615-737-1025. I'd love to see what you have to say.
And you can go with a lot of different guys when it comes to that. You can go with the young, maybe some of the veterans, the winning personality that Barry Trotz and company wanted to go out and get, the leadership that they did. You know, obviously they moved off of Ryan Johansson, they moved off of Matt Duchene for a reason, and they wanted to go get perennial winners. And I think what Barry Trotz said when he was talking to Jared Stillman before the season kicked off last week, he said this is essentially, in football terms, we're going from a run first offense to a high octane passing offense,
and the air raid offense.
And clearly you can see that. But we're going to keep discussing the Nashville Predators throughout the first hour of the show. We're going to get to the Titans later on, but I want to get into the Thursday night football game last night. I know a lot of people were watching baseball, but I had my eye on the NFL, and it was Broncos Chiefs. And I know you're not a big betting guy, but I am, and I always like to look at the lines and spreads. And I saw that it was a 10.5-point spread. Kansas City favored at home on Thursday Night Football, and I was like, you know what? I like that half point is kind of keeping me from going with the Chiefs. I'm going to go Broncos 10.5. Well, sure enough, the Chiefs win by 11.
Yep.
And the game was awful.
You got lucky too. You got lucky with all that too.
The game was terrible. Here's the thing, is a couple years ago the Broncos were always known as, oh, they're a quarterback away. As soon as they get a quarterback, they're gonna be looking great. Blah blah blah. They go out and get Russell Wilson. They trade the farm for him, and he comes in, he stinks up the joint. They're like, oh, it's coaching. It's Nathaniel Hackett, worst coaching job in the history of the NFL. And then who do they go get? Sean Payton, Super Bowl winning coach from the Saints with Drew Brees.
A trade too, right?
Yeah, they traded. I mean, they traded a first and a third for him.
That's right. Yeah,
and they've still been stinking up the joint. He even Sean Payton can't save Russell Wilson.
It's not good.
From his own very rapid demise.
I know. It reminds me of the Kyle Orton days just because of how bad it is there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
But the one thing that I found hilarious was Steve Smith Sr. on the pregame show on NFL, on it was either on the Amazon Prime pregame show. He was talking about Jerry Jeudy, and this was flying all over social media. Here is what Steve Smith Sr. had to say about wide receiver Jerry Jeudy.
Broncos wide receiver Jerry Jeudy was walking by, and Steve called out to him, and he got a different reaction.
I called out to him because on my podcast, Cut to It, I just talked about guys that maybe have not showed up in a way or in a manner. And so the word that I've used to describe him in the past was a jag, just a guy.
Just a guy.
When I saw him, he's playing well. I wanted to say to him face-to-face, like, hey, I know I said some things in the past I probably shouldn't have, and I'm sorry. That's what I wanted to say to him. His response, Mike Rob, was ninja.
Ninja?
Yes, I'm using the word ninja. I'm just using the word ninja. I don't mess with you. And it was a curse word. And so I was like, all right. And then he repeated it. So I'll say it again. I'm sorry that I said you were a jag, just a guy who's an average wide receiver they use a first-round pick on that isn't doing anything. I hope today that you actually show up in a way that you haven't showed up in the last couple of years since they drafted you. So if you ever got a problem with Agent 89, I'm sorry for saying that you're an average wide receiver that they eventually will move on. And when teams call me and asking, should they trade for you, I will say no, don't trade for Jerry Jeudy because he's mentally unable to handle constructive criticism from people who watch specifically, can he be a wide receiver? He could be a wide receiver. He's a tier three. Go back into the studio. I'm done now. Thank you.
That was Steve Smith Sr. on the Amazon Prime pregame show.
Yeah, definitely planned.
And he just laid it out on Jerry Jeudy. And, can you blame him? First round pick?
Oh my gosh.
Jerry Jeudy was supposed to be that guy in the league. And Steve Smith Sr., a guy that's known for his legendary trash talker with his days with the Panthers and Ravens. Feisty little wide receiver. Yeah. Loved watching Steve Smith back in the day. Loved his trash talking. But he actually tried to go up and make amends.
Oh,
and Jerry Jeudy wasn't having it. Big mistake by Jerry Jeudy, because now Jerry Jeudy is the laughingstock of last night, along with Russell Wilson in his performance. What was your opinion on that?
Oh, my gosh. Just look, like I just said right after the clip got done, yeah, totally planned, right? But I think the whole drama that I think ensues between wide receivers in general sometimes, it gets blown out of proportion just like anything. Like if I was jiving you about something, that obviously that would too, but I don't know. I just I look at it as a quick little candid comment. Just move on from it now. I mean, look, it's been said, it's interesting, but at the same time, Steve Smith,
dude,
he just cannot stay away from how he used to be on the field.
That is a guy I would never want to talk trash to.
No.
I mean, listen, you gotta know your audience, and trying to start beef with a guy that's known for his trash talking, being the underdog that Steve Smith was, always fighting with an edge, being a smaller, underrated, constantly overlooked. Like, dude, don't start that with Steve
Smith. I would
Smith.
Rather listen to Derek Mason chirp Bill Belichick again.
Oh, that was funny.
Yeah.
But to wrap up our first segment here with some of the headlines, MTSU gets their first win over La Tech, finally, since beating Murray State. Connor, round of applause here. MTSU finally getting a win. Finally getting a win. How was the win around campus? Can you let us know what the vibe was? We know it's hard nowadays to get those, but
yeah, they're clearly blue knighted, right?
True blue, baby. Hey, listen, I was in attendance. It was all 40 people that were there were having the time of their lives. I only stayed for the fourth quarter because I had a game of my own in which I scored a touchdown. No, not actually.
Wow, he was on the injury report, and then he comes back and scores a touchdown.
Yeah,
back strong on your flying football
thank
game,
you, thank you.
That absolutely nobody cares about.
Yeah, I care. We're 3-0.
I don't think we noticed it because it must have been on ESPN The Ocho or something like that.
The Ocho.
Oh, well.
You assume we actually got TV time for it.
Maybe Twitch time.
Either way, 615-737-1025. All fun, but in all reality, congratulations, MTSU. That was a good win.
Yeah, it was.
I don't think that they were favored against La Tech.
They were not.
So that was a big upset by them. Could be a game that they could actually use to turn this season around, and maybe Rick Stockstill can really get the boys to rally. So all jokes aside, we like to mess with MTSU, our alma mater's rival. So if you do tune in, you do understand that we like to poke fun with them. But either way, rest of the hour, we're going to be getting into the Nashville Predators, what we have seen, and the question of the day is, what player are you most forward to watching play and getting the most out of this season? You're listening to Riddle in the Reporter here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Welcome back into Riddle and the Reporter. Junie Riddle, Nick Teaser, Connor Newt in the producing seat tonight on this Friday. You can always tune in to our show 6 to 8 on Friday evenings, unless there's a Preds game. Sometimes we get flexed out, and we will always keep you posted about when we will be on the air. But we're spending this hour talking about the Nashville Predators. I think that this is the talk of the town right now. They've gotten all the hype, first two games. They go on the road opening. I mean, they open the season up in that triple header on ESPN. You get the first game, 4:30 in the afternoon here in Central
Time. Such a weird time.
I liked it. I kind of liked it. Imagine getting off work and immediately just catching a Preds game.
I think that's what I liked about it.
It's over by dinner time. You know, put the kids to bed early. I know you ain't got to worry about that, but I do. But either way, they go up against the Tampa Bay Lightning, and I thought the Preds were ultra competitive in that game. Started off super slow, but ended up having a really good second period and a great start to the third. But due to some subjectable calls in that matchup, and I think the special teams for the Tampa Bay Lightning with the penalty shot and also the two power play goals that they had, that was the difference in the game. But other than that, I thought the Preds looked really, really good. And then they come here at home against Seattle, which I believe Seattle lost to Vegas in the second round, yes, of the playoffs last year.
Well, they also they just opened the season in Vegas because Vegas had their banner raising, and then Seattle was there, and they had the little bit of the tease for the expansion teams playing one another, who will also be playing in the Winter Classic this year, which is very strange because you usually see teams that have a long history playing each other in that game, but we're not going to see that this year. It's going to be two brand new teams in the Winter Classic, so they're kind of redefining that. But yes, and also too, here's a nugget that I passed along to some folks last night too. Seattle's first ever victory was on the road against the National Predators.
I do remember that. I remember I was
2 years ago. Yeah,
working in promotions for opening night, doing some social media for the Gold Walk, and I was like seeing all these Seattle fans. I'm like, I mean, what did y'all just get into hockey and wanted to pick the new team with the cool looking jerseys? Yeah. I mean, Seattle does have some cool looking jerseys.
You know what? Their jersey, really quickly, it kind of reminds me, you know, those really cool S's that like people drew like when we were growing up. Like the that's what it reminded me of growing up. And my brothers can do it. I cannot draw that whatsoever. But hey, we do have someone on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com that answered our question. And please let us know as well, what player are you most excited for this season? I had Wes that texted it and said, Novak, I think he's got that potential to be a special player for us. With that said, Yusso P, and yes, I'm quoting Wes, Yusso Parsonen, is going to be very fun if Philip Forsberg and Ryan O'Reilly can keep feeding him. I'd like to see him go off. He said, we also need a name for the Philip and Ryan duo. I think they'll rotate the second winger on that line throughout the season. I guess we'll have to come up with a name for that, according to Wes.
No, and I like that he brought up both of those guys because Yusso Parsonen has a goal in each of the first two games.
He has 5 shots and 2 goals.
Yeah, I think he is. We were talking about in the offseason about which player, because you know there were so many young centers on this team that were showing out and performing, and Yusso Parsonen was one of them. And you kept bringing up that I think that this guy would be the perfect fit to move to wing because one of them had to do it.
Yep.
And we wanted to make sure that it was going to be the guy that was going to get the most production. And I think, you know, so far of what we've seen, him being put on the first line with a Ryan O'Reilly and a Philip Forsberg has looked really, really good so far, and I'm liking what I'm seeing from him. But to go back to the texter's text about, you know, the player he's most excited about, we share the same player. And I've told you this. I am team Tommy Novak all the way. I love the way that he plays. He's not overly flashy. I feel like he's very fundamentally sound. He's very underrated, but I feel like he's always making really good plays. And last night I saw him. He did like a little behind the back to somebody. I can't remember who he passed it to. And then they got a big shot on goal. And I'm just like, why does this team like look like the Harlem Globetrotters on ice? Like the way it's just night and day from last year. The way that they're maneuvering the puck, the amount of shots that they're getting on the goal, the amount of chances they're taking. Didn't really see a lot of high risk chances. And maybe you saw the same thing. But overall, I was just. I'm blown away by the offensive output that they're showing on the ice.
Yeah, no doubt whatsoever. And Jackson just shot his message into our text line as well, and he says he likes the FOP line, the FOP. So I don't know if that's a nickname I would use necessarily. That's what he has messaged us to. Or he just texted again and said, oh, Parsberg.
Oh, Parsberg?
I don't know if I like that name.
I have a nickname for the third line with Novak, okay. Tomasino, and Evangelista.
What's up? Because I did these a lot growing up with all my friends. We always made up our own line names, but what's appealing to you about that third line?
I just like it because it's a bunch of young guys, and, yep. and they're all very offensively sound.
Brunette has a name for it, like already.
Oh, he does?
He does.
I have not heard of this. What is his name for it?
The kid line.
The kid line? I don't like that. I don't like that. I like – hear me out. No Tomalista. That's what I like. No Tomalista.
That sounds like a popular song, like on the charts that Dua Lipa sang or something.
Maybe
oh
so.
Oh, my gosh.
But either way, something else that you saw, and I noted as well watching the game, I thought that the Preds throughout the duration of the game completely dominated, except for one portion. And that was opening up in the third period.
Yes.
At the time, they were only up 1-0.
Mm-hmm.
And it really seemed like Seattle was trying to make a push to get a bunch of scoring opportunities, keeping the puck in their offensive zone. And it seemed like they were the aggressors early. And I'm like, oh, here we go. Same old Preds. You know, they get an early goal and then they'll let it up later on. But it didn't happen because Ryan McDonagh played like freaking Superman on the first penalty kill of the third period, and it absolutely just trounced all the momentum that Seattle had. He had 3 blocks on that penalty kill.
Yes, he did.
Just back to back to back. It was spectacular the way that this team answered the bell, because that I felt like that was the issue in Tampa. And again, Tampa's a veteran team, a much more talented team, and they mm-hmm. took the opportunities that were granted to them. Some were subjectable.
Yes.
But in this game, you know, I didn't think penalties were kind of controlling the narrative of this game like it was against Tampa. And I felt like when the momentum started to shift towards Seattle, that those plays by McDonagh just completely trounced that, and the Preds just took it away the rest of the game.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with you. And the Predators locker room gave McDonagh the player of the game. That was like a WWE-esque belt.
Oh, yeah?
So that's going to be their thing this season, apparently. So McDonagh was the player of the game amongst all of the teammates down there. And then Drew in Columbia, he tells us that Tyson Barrie was very productive on the power play in Edmonton. I'm interested to see how effective he will be with the Predators forwards on the power play. And as am I, because all throughout training camp, that's where he's been. That's where he's been the most effective at times. Because just to kind of go through what this power play does look like, I think Barrie can go anywhere. He's going to help quarterback that power play. He played a lot with Nyquist, Parson, and Tomasino on the power play, even Luke Evangelista in that bumper spot up on the blue line with him. And so it's an exciting power play. Brunette's going to move it around if he doesn't like someone on their production, because the other night as well, they also moved around. It was Tommy Novak, I believe. They put him on the second power play line, and he scored in Tampa Bay. And so that was a beautiful play as well. So Another thing, too, before we go to break, we could talk more about this. And I spoke with Cody Glass at the end of the game for a one-on-one. And I think the biggest theme that I got away from last night, it was fun to play. It was fun to be out there and be more connected. I think this group was missing that. And that is what is most exciting about this team as well. They're having fun. They're connected. They're developing a chemistry that most teams that are playoff teams have to build over the course of a season, whereas you already see this developing now, and that can be very, very good.
Absolutely. The Preds, in all estimation, are off to a really, really good start. You know, this was kind of a retool year for the team, but with all that, there was a huge narrative this offseason about one of the stars of this team, and Nick and I are going to talk about whether this narrative should continue throughout the season or if the play that the Predators have shown should kind of put this to the wayside. We're going to get into that next here on Riddle and the Reporter here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
Yeah, I feel good. Obviously, I try to keep building my game too, and there's once the three really games, there's always something that you might be a little bit rusty in some situations, so I try to be as good as I can, and also like take reminders of all the situation, what's going on, and stay humble and work hard.
That was Preds goalie UC Saros talking about how he's feeling this season as the season has just kicked off this past week. Welcome back into Riddle and the Reporter, Junior Riddle, Nick Keyser, talking Nashville Predators 1-1 after two games. But even in a loss on opening night, teams looking really, really impressive, Nick. And a big narrative this offseason with all the transition and moving off players at the trade deadline at the end of last year, moving off John Hines later in the offseason, the draft being here, all the hype was, where are the Nashville Predators going? And I feel like with the hiring of Andrew Burnett and seeing what he's been trying to implement be put on the ice for us to finally see in some regular season action, I feel like it's time to revisit some of those off-season narratives. And yes, one of which was what many of us were talking about, and that is trading goalie UC Saros. Vezina finalist, perennial top three, top five goalie in the league, UC Saros, in order for them to get some more assets to build around their number one goalie prospect in the NHL, Yaroslav Askarov. So do you think that this narrative should be put to rest with the way this team is playing, knowing some really good goaltending could, you know, maybe put this team in a position that nobody expected them to be?
Yeah, I think you have to continue to wonder what the plan is going to be, and just in terms of goaltending. And goaltending is a very sensitive thing for a lot of teams, because you can either do really well with who you develop, and you can really, really fudge it up. It can go really wrong for you if you go with a wrong goaltender. And so I think for the Predators' sake, the pedigree that they have, they feel confident with what they have. But also, too, the reason it's a topic is because at the draft, that was floating around that the Predators could possibly be shopping one of their goaltenders to move higher up into the draft. And so UC Saros was out there, Askarov was out there. And so I think just for the sake of what the Predators were trying to do, I can't blame them for thinking that way if that's truly the case. But I already put this for myself on the side, on our grid, just so I did not forget. But there's no way in hell I would want to trade him now. But I think if you do decide to do it, you need to do it before the trade deadline, because you need a clear path. And so I believe I said this with Robbie and Joe. If you're going to move off of UC Saros, Kevin Lankinen can give you a little bit of good, valuable starting time. Askarov can split that time with him if you do trade UC. And then maybe Askarov gets a little bit weaned into that spot. And so I think the reason you and I bring it up is because a lot of assets can come back. Look what they got for Tanner Jeannot last year. Oh, my gosh. Like, if you get that much draft capital when you already have 11 picks this year, you have to look at it in terms of, oh, whoa. You see, we love you, but our future is going in this direction. If they are thinking this way, then that's fine. But I think right now, the way that this group has meshed together, the way that they're connected, I wouldn't trade him. There's no way.
It just feels like the overall morale of this team is they're super excited.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like the chemistry is there. And that's just something that we hadn't seen
no.
in the John Hines era. The way, again, and I'm just going to keep pushing this because it's just so important.
Yep.
Watching this team try to get up and down the ice last year was honestly, comparatively to other NHL teams,
it was sad.
It was embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
It really was. And to see the turnover and to see all the moves they made on the roster and the elevation of all the young guys, a lot of which we watched in Milwaukee last year,
yes,
as they made their playoff run, watching those guys get those opportunities playing in the NHL after the trade deadline had passed and the Preds were moving off a bunch of their veterans, and how these young players stepped up in pivotal moments. They damn near carried this team
yes,
into the playoffs.
Did. Yes, they did. And they don't ever forget about that either. They know in the back of their mind, this is a special group. They said it all training camp. They have said it time and time again when asked about the future of this team. They go back to it. Why? Because it worked. That's the most important thing. It worked. A lot of teams are getting younger. They're more reliable on their talent. But hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard enough, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what this group is. That is what you're going to see this identity become for the Predators. Look, it is very early, and I don't think we're really even overreacting to this whatsoever. You have to be honest with yourself. As a fan base, you are honest with what your expectations are. That's what this is so great about everything that's going on right now, Junie. The passion of the fans is honestly one of the best storylines right now, too, because they care. They want to see this hockey team do good. They haven't been to the Stanley Cup final all but one time, but they act like they deserve it every single season, as does a lot of teams. But the attitude here, it warrants what Barry Trotz and his staff are trying to do.
And here's the number one thing that a team needs in order to be successful. They need belief.
Yes.
And I feel like the morale is high. I feel like the players are excited. I feel like they're bought in to the identity of their coach. I feel like they got a coach that they can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
And this coach is putting them in prime situations to succeed and giving these young guys that showed out at the end of last year an opportunity to prove that they can play at this level.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this is the perfect combination. And again, I'm not going to lie to you. You know, with the unknown and with John Hines being at the helm, because he got let go so late in the offseason, before he got let go, I'm like, yeah, I think I would rather trade UC Soros to try and get some better players and more prospects and just fill that funnel and hopefully, you know, one or two guys come out of that with all the picks that you receive,
right,
for trading a top three goalie in the league.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I'm seeing what Andrew Burnett has done and what can be done with this team,
right,
and how really I feel like wide open the Central Division is this year,
yeah,
outside of, you know, Dallas and Colorado, why can't the Preds be right there in that mix?
Right, that's how they feel too. And so I want to go over to Josh from White House, because his player that he's most excited for is Roman Josi. And I want to make this a really quick point as well. Roman Josi is now the longest tenured captain in Nashville Predators history. And so I asked him about that, and just how much he's grown throughout that process as well. And for him, he had to learn from the very get-go, because he was a young captain once he got named it. I believe it was back in 2017. And it was right after they made their run to the Stanley Cup final, I think. And so for him, I think he has seen it from the dire straits of we're building something in the special. He's gone all the way back down to what it is now. And now they're slowly getting back to where they wanted to be originally in the first place with a new coach and a new GM. And so there's nothing but excitement for this group as well. And so I think that is a pivotal factor as well, because not only is he captain, but he's got McDonough and O'Reilly, the serial winners, as Barry Trotz has put it, for the entire offseason.
I just look at, you know, and again, I'm not a hockey expert. I will be the first person to tell you that. You know, my expertise is in football. But the thing I know about sports in general is you have to have a certain amount of superstar level players, which I feel like with Roman Josi, with UC Saros, and when he's playing at his highest level, you can put Philip Forsberg into that conversation as well. You have to have veterans who have won at a high level. You have to have young players that that are up and coming and on the rise that are contributing. And I feel like you also have to have a superstar at the most important position in the game. And that is what UC Saros has. The sky is the limit for this team. I am super excited to watch this team game in and game out. So this is just something that we're going to have to keep looking into throughout the year. The Preds off to a really hot start. There were open seats last night. The crowd, let me say this, Bridgestone was electric last night. It was loud. The fans were going at it. They were excited, and they got a great product on the ice. But let me tell you this. I saw a bunch of open seats last night, and if you're paying attention to this team, you need to get on this and buy in now while it's early, because the Barry Trotz era is here, the Brunette era is here, and this is a brand new Nashville Predators team, and I am so excited to see where this team goes this season. So, but coming up next, We're gonna transition a little bit into some college football. The Vols got a huge SEC matchup coming up tomorrow against Texas A&M. We're gonna break down that matchup a little bit because this could be a do or die game for a successful season for Tennessee. We're gonna get into that next here on Riddle and the Reporter on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in to Riddle and the Reporter. Junie Riddle, Nick Kieser here on this Friday evening. Just got done talking some Preds hockey, transitioning to the big game down in Knoxville this weekend. The Vols will be going up against the Texas A&M Aggies. And I got to tell you, Kieser, I really am looking forward to this matchup. I think this is a very evenly matched game. And normally, I'm not a big Vols fan. I have nothing against the Vols. You know me. I grew up in Louisville. I'm a Louisville fan. I don't really have an SEC team. I just always root against root against Kentucky. So I'm a big Vols fan when they play Kentucky. But outside of that, like, you know, I just like to see good football. And that's what the SEC typically brings. And looking at this matchup, I just think these two teams are perfectly matched up against one another. Texas A&M, really good run defense. And then the Vols are one of the best running teams in the SEC. Both have quarterbacks that when they're on their game, they can really light it up. Big-time head coaches, Jimbo Fisher, Josh Heupel. I think this is going to be a big game. It's going to be one of those 50-50 games that's going to be really, really close, down to the wire. And I don't know. Whichever team gets off to the hottest start, I think is going to have to win this
one. Yeah, and here's something I want to take just a little bit more of a look at is quarterback Joe Milton. And the reason I want to bring him up is this is what the biggest key factor is. And just to kind of go off of the SEC stats that we have so far, Joe Milton is 11th in passing yards so far this year. He is also 10th in completion, and his QBR ranks at 11th as well. So he's not your stellar quarterback whatsoever in SEC play so far this season. However, if he does step it up this week and get the win, I think it shows you that Tennessee is still in it for big wins because they've been challenged early on this year, Junie. I mean, think about it. I mean, they're not going to be the whole team of old, but I like that they have challenged him to be the leader of this team. You know, Tennessee's ranked at number 19 coming in. Do they really deserve that? That's the biggest question in the field that the Aggies have coming in because they're 4-2. Tennessee's 4-1, and so for me, the fuel behind the Aggies is we belong in this run. We belong ahead of Tennessee, if not better. Now, given the fact that Jimbo has been Jimbo this season, and they had a great, great opportunity to beat Alabama, if you ask me, but they squandered that. And so now this week you have a Tennessee squad that arguably is not what they should be this year, and they can be taken advantage of if Joe Milton does not step it up.
And with the amount of hype that we got with Joe Milton, everybody was raving about how big his arm is. I mean, Joe Rexroad wouldn't shut up about this guy. About
a
how
lot of people wouldn't, though.
He'd be a first-round pick and all this stuff. And he hasn't really delivered what we thought. And again, this all kind of goes back to last year when Hendon Hooker got hurt and he comes in, plays against Vandy. You know, they wipe the floor with Vanderbilt. And then they go into a huge Orange Bowl matchup with Clemson. And he looked excellent against Clemson. So yes. Automatically people are like, wow, you know, this is going to be really the team, because they had no Jalin Hyatt in that game, in the bowl game. So really a lot of the receivers that they're playing with this year were playing in that bowl game. And it kind of, you know, set us with a high expectation going into this year. And they haven't really gotten a marquee win, really not an opportunity to. Their one loss is to Florida, which looking at that now – because that was only week three, and we didn't really know what Florida was.
Mm-mm.
But now, after we've seen Florida kind of not look so good, especially the way they got beat against Kentucky,
I know
this is going to be the game where
we find out what they are.
Yes, exactly,
100%.
Because if they lose this game, you got Alabama after that.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go to Kentucky. And we've already seen what Kentucky did to Florida. If you can't beat Florida, I think this Tennessee-Kentucky game can be a legitimate game.
Yes.
And then to round out the year, you got UConn, which, you know, that should be an easy win. Missouri, which has been the surprise of the SEC to me.
I think they give Tennessee some trouble.
They're legit, and that's at Missouri.
Brady Cook is not to be messed with whatsoever. I think he's been the most impressive guy to watch so far in college football and the SEC. He's been fun. Well, maybe not the most. I would say Jaden Daniels has been pretty solid too. Brady Cook has the second-best QBR in the SEC, just for what it's worth. Now, I know that that's not national ranking whatsoever, but I think we're focused on what we're seeing from the SEC guys right now. But also, too, think about it this way. They have a huge game. It's at home. It's at Neyland. And then they have to go to Alabama next week. You want to have a chip on your shoulder of, we know we can freaking do this thing. They know that if they get this win, they can waltz down there to Tuscaloosa with swagger, at least a little bit more than maybe they have right now.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, Texas A&M really was right there with Alabama. And I think for majority of that game up until the second half, a few turnovers here and there for A&M. I mean, I felt like they were outplaying Bama.
Oh, my gosh. I really thought that. I think I may have picked A&M to upset Alabama. And I think it may have been one of the picks I had in Pigskin Pick'em with Robbie and Rexroad. But anyway, yeah, I think it's a very exciting matchup. This is going to be the best game so far, probably in Neyland Stadium, aside from seeing Tennessee spank the Gamecock butt the other week.
Revenge game. Big-time revenge
big
game.
Big-time. Tennessee's also rested. So how does that play a factor as well? So kind of curious to see what they do as well, because Josh Heupel, I think this is a defining win for him as well, because – and I'm not saying it maybe in the grand scheme of things, but in terms of what he's about, you know, how does he respond to, okay, we know we have some tough games coming up, but how can I lead this squad to be consistent at this point? This is where the turning point is for this program this year, I would say.
This has got to be a marquee win against a really solid Texas A&M team. Tennessee is going to have to step up. We're going to give our predictions for this game at the very end of the show. But again, the Vols should be favored to win. You're coming off a bye week. You're coming off a big win against South Carolina, revenge from last year for them wrecking your chances at the college football playoff. Tennessee has a little bit of momentum, but they're still looking for that marquee win. So we will make our game predictions for that matchup tomorrow at 2:30, and we will be picking that a little bit later on. But coming up next, The Titans are playing in London against arch rival Baltimore Ravens from back in the day. It is going to be a bruiser of a game. Next hour, we are going to be breaking down all the matchups and what it's going to take for the Titans to get a victory in London to go 3-3. You're listening to Riddle and Reporter, hour number two coming up next here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.